Something is happening right now on planet Earth, or rather, in the skies above it. Something which has the potential to change everything we know about science, technology, extraterrestrial life, and perhaps even reality itself. If you've been following the news, then you probably have some idea of what's going on. But if you want a little more than what's being shared in the headlines, and you want to know just what exactly is happening right now, then you come to the right place. Joining me tonight for a very special strange conversation are Micah Hanks of The Debrief and Joss and Monique Rose of Fright Life Paranormal. These three friends and colleagues are, quite frankly, a lot smarter than I am. So in order to get in the weeds and obtain a better idea of what's happening, I invited them to discuss the SOU, that's State of the Union, of UFOs and or UAPs. A huge thank you to Joss, Mo, and Micah for scheduling and rescheduling with me across three different time zones, and for not being mad that I was 10 minutes late for the recording of my own show. Also, during the introduction, I erroneously referred to the publication which Micah is editor-in-chief of as The Disclosure. The correct name is The Debrief. Needless to say, I've got Disclosure on the mind, which precipitated this conversation in the first place. You're listening to Strange Conversations, presented by Hey Strangeness. Stay tuned.
Are you a firm believer in extraterrestrial life? Do you want to experience your own close encounter? Are you tired of people like Whitley Strieber and Barney and Betty Hill lording their abduction experiences over you like they're so much better than everyone else? Then try Abduction Buddy. It's easy. First, download the app on your mobile device. Create a profile, then customize your profile with your abduction preferences. You can select your alien race of choice, be they greys, reptilians, insectoids, or even Scandinavians. In fact, you'll have a full tool set of customizable options, including probing, being levitated out an open window, having your memory erased, being harassed by the men in black, and suffering inexplicable injuries and exposures to radiation. And with full social media integration, you never have to worry about anyone questioning your abduction story. Abduction Buddy will automatically tweet, post, stream, and email all of your friends, family, and local media outlets all the details of your abduction experience. The app even features a map that you can use to track your interstellar craft while it's en route to whisk you away. Abduction Buddy.
Warning, no one should use Abduction Buddy. Abduction Buddy is not responsible for loss of life, disappearance, bodily harm, or madness resulting from the use of Abduction Buddy. Thank you once again for tuning into Strange Conversations. My name is Aaron, and for some reason I am still your host, likely because the FCC has not been made aware of my activities. This is the interview show that I started because I wanted an excuse to talk to people in the paranormal space who I think are cool. And joining me tonight are three extremely cool people, without whose support and influence I would likely not be sitting here today. First up, half of the Fright Life paranormal team, writer, investigator, researcher, podcaster, guy who makes lightsabers. That is a fact. That is not a joke. Musician, Joss Rose. Joss, how the hell are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing so good. It's good to see you, man.
Fantastic to see you. We don't get to talk often enough, so this is
not enough.
Good opportunity. And of course, the other half of the Fright Life team, writer, researcher, podcaster, educator, published author, as featured in The Feminine Macabre, Mrs. Monique Rose. How are you, Monique?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you. And last but not least, editor-in-chief of The Disclosure, author of The UFO Singularity, one of my favorite books, which we'll definitely be talking about tonight, musician, writer, all-around cool guy, Mr. Micah Hanks. How are you, brother?
I'm doing great, my man. Yeah, long time no see. Not really.
Yeah, it's been about a month. Felt like a long time. Felt longer.
Nope, we make it more frequent, right?
Absolutely. That's the idea. Yeah, here we are. So tonight I've asked all three of you to come together and help me and the world at large figure out what the hell is going on right now in the in the UFO UAP space, because it's a lot and I am not smart enough to pick it apart on my own. So I'm just going to kick it out there. Whoever wants to start, what the hell is going on right now?
Take it away, guys.
Okay, so I mean, a lot. It's hard to catch up, right? But then at the same time, I feel like it's sort of old hat, and we have seen it. We spoke about this a few moments ago, how we in the community are like, yeah, we've kind of been watching this for a while. Mm-hmm. All, you know, UFO, extraterrestrial, all of that kind of talk. And now it's new to these people who are seeing it and can't really deny it. So basically, yeah, Congress is going to have a meeting next Wednesday, the 29th, and that comes after the David Grush whistleblower activity that's been happening. So
it's exciting times. It feels to me like a little bit of vindication, you know, like we're being validated finally as people who have been looked at as these weirdos over here, you know, looking in the skies for UFOs. And, you know, I don't know. I'm excited. I'm very excited about what we're hearing, what we're seeing, what's coming up, and what the future looks like for us UFO type folks out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Basically something new that I noticed that Grush was saying is that he's really differentiating what happened in previous hearings where they tried to rebrand the UFO, the UAP, and say, like, this could be foreign adversaries, so make sure you're reporting. And they tried to really, I think, sanitize it in that way. And now Grush is coming forward. He brought about the information about retrieval programs and reverse engineering, but specifically something he said that we hadn't heard someone disclose publicly who worked for the government before, really, is that bodies were recovered.
Yeah.
He talked about pilots. He alluded to that a little bit. So I think that's kind of what's most breaking news to me, at least.
Just something we've had conjecture about for a long time, you know, and a lot of people, even in our community, have kind of discarded that as rumor, you know, hearsay. Micah, what do you got, man? You're at the forefront of this stuff, which we'll get into shortly, but what are things looking like from your end of the table?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's very kind of, I mean, fitting that we'd be having a conversation about it, Aaron, because the whole weekend that I was putting all this together, and like you mentioned, we'll get into the backstory about that, but it, I mean, I had the weight of the world on my shoulders, and there were very few people in the world outside of my team at the debrief who knew anything about this. But this man, Aaron Deese, he and I were traveling together, and it was fate. We hadn't planned it this way. It just so happened that leaving Ohio, I was on my way back to Asheville. He was on his way back to San Antonio. And so we had several consecutive flights lined up together. And so he was sitting there next to me, and we had a couple of beers, and I had a laptop in my lap, and I'm actually doing edits on the big article that was the first time we had seen the David Grush story. And Aaron was right there with me. He knows how crazy it was. It was absolutely insane that weekend. But again, this is what you got to do when there's big stuff coming down the pike. Now, in terms of, you know, what's going on and what am I taking, you know, what are my takeaways about things right now? Since that story dropped, obviously, there have been a lot of tremendous developments. If you'd told me, Aaron, that between you and I traveling through airports and, you know, me working on that article and literally getting home that night, pouring a great big Sprite. I never drink sodas, by the way, but I wanted something that would give me some sugar kick and keep me awake, but not caffeine kick and keep me up all night. But I was on the phone with Leslie Kane, and we were doing line edits until about 11:30 or 12 that night before dropping it on Monday. And so this whole experience was really interesting. And if you'd told me from that point that, I mean, we're not, yeah, actually, I guess we're about a month and some change after the article dropped. It was June 5th. If you'd told me there would already be new congressional hearings that were being planned and that we would be seeing this incredible legislation and that the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer would be behind this legislation, that to me is the biggest takeaway, that it has been such tremendous change, and there's been so many significant developments in such a short period of time. And so now we have legislation that is going to be presented as an amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act for next year. And with the bipartisan support it's already seeing, I think there's no question as to whether it'll go into law next January. It'll be signed into law once the bill passes and then the president signs it. But we're going to have legislation titled the UAP Disclosure Act of 2023, and it's literally asking for any information about exotic craft that have been recovered, and they term this very carefully, but biological specimens that seem to represent non-human intelligence.
Yeah.
And Joss and Monique and I were talking about this a little bit in the green room before you got here. The preferential use by David Grush and now elected officials of non-human intelligence. They're very careful not to be so specific and limited to extraterrestrial We're just talking about non-human intelligence. But again, it was incredible when Grush brought these claims forward. Of course, we've all been following that, not just me. I mean, this has been something the whole world's talking about, especially when it comes to the UAP research community. But to see the Senate Majority Leader and bipartisan support drafting a UAP disclosure bill a little more than a month later, it's taken my breath away.
It's insane. Like, literally, like you guys are saying, we've been tapped into this stuff for so long as a community and as individuals, you know. So seeing this happen right in front of us, this is something out of a movie. This is something out of a book. Like, this is I'm thinking of all these sci-fi novels I've read in my life, and I'm like, yeah, they all start this way.
Yeah. It is. It's almost like whenever Joss and I first got together, we would watch zombie movies and we're like, we would be smarter than these people because we're watching, we know what happens first, like the first zombie outbreak, right? You see it right away and you start, you know, doing your stuff and getting ready. But this is sort of what's happening right now with the UAP. It's like, wait, we're like in the middle of it now. And it takes a minute because you're like, oh, they're recognizing that this is a real thing. We've suspected strongly for quite some time.
Have you seen that? You guys may have seen that meme. It's from one of the Twilight movies where some of the rich aristocratic vampires are standing up on a balcony, like looking down at everybody else, just very patronizing.
Yes.
I feel like we're those vampires right now.
That's it, right now. It's our moment.
And I think we earned it.
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Micah, because I was going to drop it just as a not so humble brag. Like, Mr. Hanks and I were hanging out in the airport the day before this article dropped, and I got home that night and my wife was like, how was your trip? You know, and I'm exhausted. I've been awake for like 20 hours. And I was like, it's amazing. The world's about to change. And then I woke up the next morning and my feed is just full of all this stuff, you know, debrief drops, groundbreaking article. And now here we are. And even since then, we've had some stuff in the news, like activity has been ongoing and we've had a couple of really compelling reports. So let's talk about this Las Vegas thing.
Sure.
Young man, I believe his name was Angel, Angel, calls 911s and says there are these beings in my backyard. We saw something in the sky. We felt a boom. And now I'm seeing these beings in my backyard, which are not human. He specifically says they are not human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm wondering what y'all's thoughts on this report are, because I've heard different things and I've got my own take, but you know, that's why I invited you guys.
Yeah. You guys want to jump in? Go ahead.
Oh, sure. So I'm not quite sure. I wish I could ask him my own questions because there are some holes in the research I was able to kind of track where they associate it with that the light in the sky, right? That everyone saw, like, that's on video, that's on police body cam. It looked like it could have been, you know, a meteorite or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. You know, it was picked up on different things, and then a huge crash sound was picked up on the Ring doorbell cam, which was in the vicinity of their home, and then he called 911 claiming this crash landed. Now the footage of the backyard, there's minimal disturbance. They do highlight like a ring in the ground, but it looks like there are so many vehicles there that could have made, you know, that circular, like just turning a car around in that space or a mm-hmm. trailer pulling behind. So I was skeptical of that. Not even necessarily that they were hoaxing, just maybe they were tying things together and they did see something, but just couldn't quite tie it together for me, like evidence wise. They did seem a little bit really cool headed when talking to the police.
Yeah.
You know, the police officer, I mentioned this in a quick video I did about it. The officer looks a little bit jolted and he's like flashing his flashlight around a little bit jumpy, I think. But the family's kind of leisurely leaning against the car, hanging out outside, not really afraid of it. So I don't know. It doesn't quite come together for me, but I'm not ready to say, you know, they were lying or call them hoaxers or anything at this point, because I don't know why they would. I think it's crazy anytime someone would actually call 911 and get police involved, call police to your home and kind of
That's my question on this one, is if this is a hoax, if it's a fabrication, why? Because you're risking, mm-hmm. you know, legal prosecution by filing a police report for something that you made up, you know, and then of course we do, like you mentioned, we do have the body cam footage. So I'm glad you raised that point, because that's kind of where I'm stuck on this one. But, you know, please continue, guys. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's just why I can't, I wish I could just speak to him. And then it turns out that, you know, they kind of went, they went quiet. I did think, okay, maybe he's, they're collecting their thoughts. They want to roll out any footage they have on their own terms, which is just smart, you know, in this day where anyone can grab hold of your videos and use it and share it. And then he did, he made his own YouTube channel. Cause I think that was new within a few days after they experienced this.
Now see that I didn't know. I was going to ask, I think he's done a couple interviews, but has there been an attempt to capitalize on this? So interesting. Okay.
He did make his own YouTube channel. I think it was his only video on there was explaining though what had happened. So
I don't think it's there anymore either. I think he took it down, but something that just came to my mind while you were talking about how they were so calm afterwards. I had an experience, and you were there, at my parents' house, and there was this crazy noise in the backyard. Couldn't explain it. Totally freaked me out. And we actually called the police because I thought it was like a, I don't know what I thought, but maybe it was like a person who was in the backyard, like making weird sounds at me.
Like drugged out or like a rabid animal.
So we called the cops, and when he showed up, we were pretty calm about it, actually. And it was just kind of like, here's what happened. Would you mind checking out the backyard? And he couldn't find any tracks. He couldn't find any evidence of animals hanging out back there. But the sound that I heard was like this insane, like cackling laughter, kind of yelling sound is the best way I can describe it. And it terrified me. Like I couldn't talk. I was just like in total shock. And by the time the cops got there, I had calmed down a little bit and was able to articulate what happened. And so.
And I guess being calmed by the police arriving to kind of check it out. Okay. That makes sense.
Just a thought that popped in while you were saying that, but there are so many things that just don't quite get there.
Right. I would have liked them to describe the sound of it taking off. How did it leave? How did, if a craft crashed in their backyard and there were these 9 foot tall beings and then no one saw them leave, but it was a physical crash in the first place, that's just, that doesn't add up or connect to me either. So much. So I don't know.
Yeah. I kind of share those views, by the way, Monique. I think that there are obviously things that should be taken into consideration. Like for instance, why go to the trouble of, actually getting in trouble by calling 911? But then again, a lot of the aspects of the story just to me right off the hop did not seem entirely credible. Now, something that was kind of interesting, though, was that the police officer's original response, they definitely seemed to be kind of freaked out themselves, and they seemed to sort of treat this like, well, you know, maybe there's something going on. And I think that that has to do with the bright, you know, flash of light, which to me, again, what I saw on the security cameras, it looked sort of like a meteor to me. That's how I would characterize that. But the whole set of circumstances, you know, was a little strange in the sense that, you know, here's an entire family, like you mentioned, they're very nonchalant about this. They're risking potentially getting in trouble by calling 911. That's a big no-no if you don't have a legitimate emergency. Police show up. Police seem to take them seriously. And there's the body cam footage, of course, that was reported. I think that it was it KLAS, I think, out there in Las Vegas that was reporting on that. So, you know, there are aspects of the story that are very interesting. Now, some would say, well, but, you know, aliens, right? They're not going to be 8 foot tall. They're not going to be, you know, large creatures. They're going to be little guys, right, with big heads. There are some instances in UFO lore. And again, we have to be careful about, you know, how much, I guess, certainty we ascribe to the stories from the traditional UAP narratives. But there was that incident in Russia that occurred right back in, I think, the 1990s. Jacques Vallée, as a sort of an addendum to his book Revelations, talked about this, where there was a multiple witness sighting of a landed craft, and rather tall beings came off of this craft. And Vallée was compelled enough by this case to travel to Russia to speak to people, to interview some of the witnesses. And it was really not just a, hey, you know, UFO lands, beings drop off, you know, or you know, step off of the thing. They, you know, pop out, say hello, get back on board, and then take off. I mean, there were some high strangeness elements to that case. I think that's the best way to try and characterize it. And really, in truth, when it comes to witness descriptions of UAP encounters, close encounters of the third kind, if we're to borrow Hynek's characterization mm-hmm. of a landed craft and the observations of occupants, there's very little about that kind of, you know, extreme UAP encounter that isn't sort of high strangeness. A lot of this stuff gets in that realm. And I have some thoughts about that, but all that said, I mean, it's not to say that there is no precedent for there being sightings of taller beings in association with landed craft. And that's essentially what was described in this Las Vegas case, too.
This is an aside, but this is why I invited the three of you guys to have this conversation. there were a lot of people to pick from, but you were the first three that came to mind. And I'm sure anyone listening can understand why at this point. So we've got this compelling eyewitness testimony kind of falling in line with what we've seen with other compelling eyewitness testimony over the last however many decades, you know, however many. And then we've also got this interesting one that I just heard about a couple days ago. A gentleman vacationing in Mexico caught some kind of an object in the background while taking a selfie of himself. You guys seen this one?
I haven't seen this one yet.
It's pretty, it's interesting. It's very recent. It actually came, I saw it on, I had opened Skype for an interview and it came up in the Skype news feed, which I didn't even know was a thing. So we've got that one. We've got this case out of Iraq that we're hearing a lot about nowadays, where this drone operator caught what looks like a large sphere flying over Kandahar. I don't remember the city now. But you know, a major city where there's active US military activity. We've got all this stuff happening while we have this groundbreaking news report, you know, of Mr. Gersh coming forward and revealing all this information. That's really kind of what motivated me to have this conversation with you guys, because not only are we reaching this point where the government basically has no choice but to disclose this stuff to us, you know, like they don't have to tell us what they know about Sasquatch. They don't have to tell us what they know about the Mothman. I know, because I submitted an FOIA request for that. but they kind of don't. They kind of don't have a choice now. So I guess what I want to ask is the climate now. What got us to where we are, where we are in this climate that the government really has to start discussing this stuff with us, as opposed to just saying, nah, it's a weather balloon. The Phoenix lights were an illusion. Nah. No. What got us here?
Well, you know, I might jump in on that one very quickly and just say, I mean, 2017 was obviously that kind of landmark moment where when the New York Times, right, we have a paper of record where we have this story by Ralph Blumenthal, Leslie Kane, and also the Pentagon correspondent, Helene Cooper, who was the third author on that one. That in itself was pretty significant. And when this story broke, I remember seeing it the very day that story appeared online, and I didn't get out in time. It was late in the evening when I saw it, and didn't get out in time to be able to grab one of those physical copies. I think you can probably still order them, but the point is, I began to notice, okay, you know, after reading that story, this is probably going to be historic for a few reasons. One, the DOD's been saying for years that they no longer investigate UAP. Now, although at that time we didn't have all the details, what was later revealed is that the program that was referred to as ATIP in that 2017 article was actually OSAP. That was the program within the Defense Intelligence Agency, which is a combat support agency within the DOD. That program had been what was actually studying UAP and related phenomena. They did a lot of investigations out there at Skinwalker Ranch, for instance.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So OSAP is what was being referred to. The reason why ATIP was described in that article is because, in truth, OSAP had an unclassified nickname that was ATIP, Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. But again, back to the point here, in terms of what brought us from, you know, nobody takes this stuff very seriously to all of a sudden, we're now seeing every single year legislation and amendments added to the National Defense Authorization Act. It was really that 2017 article that first kind of broke down that barrier in many ways. People having once viewed UAP or UFOs as just being water cooler and now going, well, there's a there because the DOD is looking into this. And in fact, while OSAP was ongoing between 2008 and 2010, it was still stated on the DOD website, UFOs, there was a fact sheet that you could find. I dug it up with Wayback Machine and it said, we no longer look into this, which was a lie. I mean, they were not telling us the truth. So for those who are a little more conspiratorially inclined, I think that I can understand why they would feel that way, because there's historical precedent for that. The government lying to us about they're not having any interest in UFOs when in fact they were actually using taxpayer money to fund a program that was investigating that stuff out there at Skinwalker Ranch and other places too. I've interviewed Colin Kelleher, who had been, I guess, the deputy director, essentially, of ALSAP, and he had led many of the scientific investigations, and he told me all about them traveling down to Brazil, interviewing UAP experiencers and researchers as well down there in Brazil. So there were a lot of things that ALSAP was doing. But after that story breaks, really, citizen action, people start getting interested. They're wanting to see, okay, well, what was really going on? How much can we learn? FOIA requests, again, were being filed. And in pretty quick succession, by 2019, we had another article in the New York Times. We also had, I believe, the Navy were the first to update their reporting procedures. Mm-hmm. And started saying, look, we got to end the stigma that is preventing pilots and other personnel from coming forward and reporting the kind of things that they are experiencing. Then in 2020, we had the official establishment of the UAP Task Force. In late 2021, I think, is when we first see the DOD come out. And they say, we've got a new investigative body that's going to be called the Airborne Object Identification Management and Synchronization Group. That name obviously didn't stick. And
good luck with that one, paranormal community. Have fun.
And that's exactly why I think they named it that, because they knew this is unpronounceable. It's unmemorable. Nobody's going to even be able to pronounce it, let alone remember the fact that we've named it this. But thanks to the diligence of U.S. Senator from New York, Kirsten Gillibrand, she was the first to present this amendment that went into the NDAA and was passed into law the following year. And with that first Gillibrand amendment, we had the establishment of what is now known as the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office. And essentially, AMSOG carried over, and its authority was expanded somewhat. It was given a new name. But then we had in 2023, of course, that whistleblower amendment that was added to that version of the NDAA. So really, we can trace all this back to 2017. The revelation in the New York Times that the DOD was still involved in UFO investigations, and of course, public scrutiny of that fact. Why haven't we been told about this, and really, how deep does this go? And the response from the military and from elected officials thereafter had been, well, okay, we want to know also, so let's dig into this. And hence why we continue to see this legislation. And again, the current legislation, this so-called UAP Disclosure Act of 2023, that is being pushed by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, this is, to me, the most significant legislation that we have seen really in years. And certainly with regard to all the UAP legislation we've already been seeing, this is probably the biggest deal I, in recent memory, recall having seen. And it's incredible looking between 2017 and today at how much progress has been made. It's really actually kind of jaw-dropping.
Micah,
right,
what is...
Absolutely.
No, go ahead, Mo. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say it's historic. It's an historic event, and I am excited to be here for it.
It's like floodgate kind of thing. It's really interesting to see, like what Micah was saying, where it was a slow drip of information that gradually turned into like a small faucet into a garden hose, and now it's like just the next month and a half is going to be insane with the new legislation and all of these people that are then going to come forward, because now it's going to be okay.
Well, yeah. And I think it had to evolve. Like, once they took it seriously after that article 2017, it had to really evolve quickly, and I think it has. And they really just had to get organized, figure out what questions are we asking? Who are we asking this of? Because there are so many different branches and different programs that really don't even talk to each other, that I think this is just how it's kind of playing out and organizing itself into what it is now. So I think it'll continue to be groundbreaking from here on.
Yeah. Like, really, what we can really only guess at this point, and we probably will. I want to speculate a little bit before we conclude tonight. But, we've got a top level government intelligence official, a guy affiliated with the NRO. And I know a couple people that worked for the NRO in their capacity in the military. Those people take their jobs extremely seriously. They are not here to mess around. you've got this top tier government official guy saying, yeah, not only have we known about this stuff for a long time, not only has this information been kept from you and from Congress, but we also have crash retrievals. We have body retrievals, you know, and again, this is something we had rumors about for a long, long time. I think about Project Moondust, which, you know, by a lot of people, I think was discarded as just being pure nonsensical rumor. But this was a rumored government program. It's totally set up 100%, I believe, during the Cold War to retrieve crashed UFOs. And now it's like all these old stories that we, even some of us in the paranormal community, probably wrote off and said, okay, that's too outlandish even for me. Do we need to reassess those older stories now? Like, do we need to go back through some of these older reports and go, wait a minute, let's hold it up to the lens of what Gersh is telling us right now?
Yeah,
that's a good point. Josh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, going back into, you know, the archives and seeing these things that are now going to be validated. I mean, there's such a backlog of cases that could now be like, yeah, totally, that happened. Mm-hmm. It makes my brain explode. Like, I just can't even.
It's physically painful.
Yeah,
it is at times. You know, although the eye strain is worse than the brain strain, and Mike, you know, spending so much time on the screen. You know, yeah. To Josh's point, though, I've actually got my facsimile copies of the Roswell Daily Record, the actual news printings that broke the story of an alleged crash retrieval that occurred down there in New Mexico in 1947. It used to be on this wall, and I decided to change things up, so they're over there now. But anyway, point is, for years, people have wondered, is there a there or not? Because, I mean, the original story, I don't know, you know, why the computer has to always do, like, updates when I'm on the camera.
I was going to say, we lost your logo. Dang, I was enjoying it.
You know, brought to you by Dell Computers.
I'm on it, bro.
Yeah, I got to get that plug in there. But with Roswell, we were told flying saucer, then it was a weather balloon. Then decades later, this, you know, story comes back to public attention thanks to the work of civilian researchers like Stanton Friedman, Bill Moore. Charles Berlitz was the co-author of that first book with Bill Moore, The Roswell Incident, in 1980. And then Unsolved Mysteries gets into the game. Of course, there were also some other great researchers who did even more work trying to interview people, Kevin Randall, Don Schmidt, and others. But the result had been that there were several different kind of variations of the Roswell story. And then the U.S. Air Force finally is compelled to reopen their files, thanks in part, and this is important, to senators getting into the game and saying, look, we want to know what the Air Force actually found. There's tremendous public interest in this. So a lot of what we're seeing right now is not unlike what we've seen in years past. Back in the 1990s, we had very similar things where there were elected officials who were compelled by, you know, the interest that their constituents had in this popular ufology. And so they were saying, look, Air Force, if there really is anything to this, let us know what you got. And of significance here is that the Air Force changed their story again. Well, first it was a flying saucer, but we quickly covered that up and everything. Well, we didn't cover it up. It was just a weather balloon, but that's true, until it turned out it wasn't. No, they actually had covered something up, and they said, well, it was actually a top secret program that involved high altitude balloons. And these were part of the Mogul Project, or Project Mogul, as it was known at that time, but it was classified, so we couldn't come out and really tell you what that was. If you go back and you read those two Air Force reports, the Roswell case closed, there are a lot of real stretches where they're, for instance, saying that the residents of Roswell had probably misremembered incidents involving crashes that occurred, you know, years later, almost a decade later, in fact. And they're saying maybe the burn, look at Aaron.
Those listening can't see my face right now, but I'm making that face that says, sorry, please continue.
Strange credulity to say that people who in 1947 were supposed to have a recollection of an incident involving an exotic craft and perhaps the retrieval not only of that craft, but also of the bodies. And then an incident that occurs like a decade later where there was an aircraft, a clearly unambiguously U.S. Air Force aircraft that crashes and the charred remains of human pilots might have been mistaken for aliens. Things like this are among the arguments that are laid out by the Air Force in that document. And again, John Greenwald, myself, and plenty of others have pointed out the fact that it's like, the Air Force just kind of threw together a mishmash of a bunch of stuff and said, here's what people misremembered and thought they actually were talking about when it comes to the Roswell case. That was a very convenient way of saying these people aren't lying. They're just mistaken. Problem is, I mean, it's stuff that's scattered throughout, you know, more than a decade, all these incidents. And the Air Force tries to offer these semi-authoritative, you know, explanations for all this stuff. A lot of people came away from it going, you know, the Air Force doesn't seem to have any kind of clear, consistent narrative that they're offering as their actual explanation. One thing that's abundantly clear, though, is that they lied to us about what this actually was, if Mogul balloons were indeed what were recovered. If they lied once, who's to say they weren't lying again? Now, I've always called these crash wreckage retrieval stories myths. And that's not to say that they aren't true. It's just that it seems evident to me that there may be a grain of truth, whatever that is. And then there's a lot of stuff that's built onto that over time. But now that we're hearing all this discussion about wreckage retrievals, Monique brought up the important point earlier about pilots. And again, this because David Grush has been asked by journalist Ross Coulthart in that big interview that News Nation did. Indeed, the whole thing about pilots is so controversial to everybody. But I'm like, guys, if you look at the history of this topic, there are countless descriptions of observations of landed craft where individuals in their waking memory, full consciousness, they clearly can see in front of them a landed craft and the humanoid occupants outside that craft. But nobody wants to talk about it now. And it's so controversial that Grush, I think, very carefully worded it. He says, well, you know, when you got crashes every now and then, yeah, there are pilots. So I'm looking back at Roswell now, and I'm looking back at some of these other stories. I'm thinking about cases like the 1964 Socorro incident in New Mexico, when Lonnie Zamora, the police officer, sees this landed Tic Tac and these two little guys in white suits standing outside the thing. I'm thinking about a lot of these earlier cases and going, okay, how much more was there actually to these stories? Mm-hmm. And the Air Force, of course, did not do their due diligence back in the days of Project Blue Book. It was a public relations campaign, and they were doing as little actual science and investigation as they possibly could. Let's just be clear. That's not my interpretation. If you go back and you read those documents, it is clear. It's plainly evident. They didn't give a damn. Okay. And now, yes, in light of all that, I'm looking at this and going, maybe there was a whole lot more going on. Maybe there was some information that was being withheld. Maybe there was a lack of information, but indeed at some time, at some point, maybe there were some things that were acquired that now it's finally coming to light. And thanks to some of these whistleblowers, some of whom, as of the time we're recording this, we have yet to even hear from, but we're going to be hearing from within a week or so. I mean, this could be a moment of reckoning, ladies and gentlemen.
Absolutely. And if you go back to the 40s with Roswell and everything since then, when you're talking about Project Blue Book, not only did they not, it's not really that they didn't care, it's that they were specifically told to find the easiest possibility and explain it away. So then you talk about disinformation campaigns. So it's not even just these people misremembering or the game of telephone through information where, you know, you add a little bit each time or you leave a little bit out. It's purposeful disinformation by the government. Mm-hmm. So that's also out there. We've got that going on.
Very well
too.
Said,
so,
by the way. Very well said, because it is purposeful disinformation, right. But go ahead, please.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just been, you know, it's a little bit on the conspiracy theory side of things, but it's happened historically. And is that going to continue to happen? That's where I've got my like skeptical side going, where of course, you know, I'm a believer and I've always been interested in this, but I want to watch what the government puts out and how they're allowing these narratives to come forward. So that's why I think that the hearing is fantastic, because that's a controlled setting where it's like you're, you know, swearing people in to have these important conversations in a formal setting. But it's interesting to see this disinformation campaign, the history. Yeah. And then we have some people, I have it in my notes here because I thought it was interesting. When it first came out, the Grush thing, I questioned it. Why now? Why is he being allowed to speak? You know, because like, look at Bob Lazar in the 80s. He spoke out, but he had his voice changed and his face blacked out on, you know, I think that was KLAS as well.
It was. I was going to mention that earlier. Same radios or same TV station. Yeah.
So, you know, it happened a little bit differently. And is that because we're more evolved, we're more ready? It's, well, yeah, it's the time is now, or why is the time now is kind of what I'm wondering.
We've had this discussion amongst ourselves a few nights.
Yeah.
And I just feel it like it's part of the times, like where we're at now is much different as far as people who are into UFOs and people who accept that as truth than back in the 80s when Bob Lazar came out. And he had to take those precautions because of, you know, how that would be received by the populace. But now we've, you know, starting back in 2017, like what Micah was saying, like this is something that has almost become mainstream to the point where people see these incredible videos of like the Tic Tac and there's a recent one of a guy in a private plane, and he gets a really clear video of this thing flying past his window. Yes. And something that jumps out at me about that is how Bob Lazar explains how these craft work, where they don't fly like this, they fly sideways.
Yeah,
Mike is doing, we're high-fiving over
there.
That's right. And this video shows that it's exactly flying like this. And it's just so much like little bits of validation that just, I get so excited. And
yeah, he's less skeptical than me.
Less skeptical. What you were saying about like, why would he come out and just disclose this, you know, to the public? And I just think that it's because he can't. Like, okay. He has the same motivation that Bob Lazar did, where he's like, I want to tell this stuff, but if I don't do it in an extremely public light, my life will be in danger. Mm-hmm. And now he's got a spotlight on him. People are keeping track of where he is and what he's doing. So he feels like probably a little bit more protected than if just he was to like leak it to somebody and then that person put it out there.
I was going to say, I don't think they're mutually exclusive ideas to have, you know, the truth of it and that really exists, and to have the disinformation campaign or the funneling of information in a way that they want us to hear it or perceive it.
100%. It could be a little bit of both. And I have no doubt that it probably is that right now, that there are credible individuals providing credible testimony, but then that there are some probably who are out there playing Operation Chaos, trying to stir the pot and trying to confuse. Some of those people may be doing so knowingly. They may be from within government. Some may be from within the UFO community, and they're doing that because they disagree with the way that things are being handled by those from within government. I mean, again, human psychology is a fascinating thing, and I've tried to look at every different angle. Nobody can really calculate every possible outcome and play that's going to occur, but I'm certain that there are going to be people out here in the midst of all this who are knowingly trying to present bad information, who perhaps unknowingly are doing the same thing. And then there, again, as members of the Senate and the House have been saying, there appear to be some individuals who have provided credible testimony. A couple of really important points about that. Again, we've had Marco Rubio in recent days saying Grush ain't the only person we've heard from. We've been hearing from people now for years who have provided similar testimony, and it's really compelled us. We think these are credible individuals. Some of them are known publicly. Others work within government. They don't want their information released. We have to be careful about how we talk about those people so as to protect them and their identities and, of course, their employment within government and the national security considerations related to their employment. But what we have here is we have multiple individuals. Right. A lot of people seem to have missed that out. You know, we, of course, are discussing it here. But I mean, I think when I look at the mainstream media coverage, everybody's saying one guy's coming out with some crazy claims and it's the same old stuff we've been hearing and there's still no hard evidence. Well, actually, there have been multiple individuals. Rubio's clarified this. And again, now with the forthcoming congressional hearings, we now know that there will be at least three individuals who will be providing testimony on that occasion. So, in addition to what Rubio's already told us, we're probably going to meet, so to speak, some of these whistleblowers in the days ahead. But another point, and this coming back to what Joss was talking about here, we also have Grush coming out. What does he stand to lose? What does he stand to gain? Where he is very different from people like Bob Lazar and the way that those individuals have come forward in the past and shared this kind of information, is that Grush has filed an official Intelligence Community Inspector General complaint. And because he has done that, now, if he is found to have made any kind of false statements, he can actually be held criminally liable for doing that. He stands to lose everything. And notably, Mick West and others, people who err far on the side of skepticism, have still said they believe that Grush believes he's, you know, telling the truth, but that maybe his claims that he's making are inaccurate. And again, I think that's a very important point that Mick makes right there. And that observation in itself is important in the sense that people who generally don't believe these kind of UFO claims are still compelled by what Grush is saying, and at very least say that he seems to think it's true, because they recognize, look, if he is not telling the truth, this IC Inspector General complaint could get him in trouble. But now, if he believes what he has been told, if he reported hundreds of pages of classified documents based on testimony provided to him by high-ranking officials that he has provided to the Inspector General as evidence substantiating the claims he has made, if the investigations into this actually reveal that this information is true and accurate, and if indeed there are legacy programs that have involved the acquisition of exotic craft, possibly of non-human intelligence origin, and indeed this has been illegally withheld from Congress, it's a huge issue, right? So in addition to him laying himself out there, you know, bare and standing to lose everything with an official investigation by the Intelligence Community Inspector General now pending, and these additional whistleblowers, if nothing else compels folks at home listening and seeing all this and hearing how different all this is from the stuff that's occurred in the past where somebody comes forward and tells a story, you know, we have people who now could go to jail if they are found to be lying. Mm-hmm. There are classified documents that are now part of this investigation. But fundamentally, we also have multiple whistleblowers, and the members of the Senate and the House who say they've heard these people's testimony, they find them credible enough to pass an act as an amendment to the NDAA called the UAP Disclosure Act of 2023. Folks, this is historic. It's incredible. And like you guys said earlier, it's almost like a damn sci-fi novel.
This is one of those, I really feel that we are in the midst of a watershed moment. This is something that's going to be talked about for a very, very long time, forever, not just in the paranormal community. We're talking about multiple Roswells. We're talking about multiple Kecksburgs or Aurora incidents that the government has known about for so long. I'm sorry, you guys have already said that. It just blows my mind. It really freaks me out. and we do have to talk about motivations, because when you've reached the level of, you know, clout in the military that Mr. Grush has reached, your benefits package, your retirement package is pretty sweet. Like, you know, and yes, there's money to be made here. People are going to write books. They're going to make documentaries. They're going to record podcasts about it, for Christ's sake. Any one of the four of us could sit down tomorrow and come up with a viral TikTok that would probably get 500,000 views. So we do have to look at motivations. But what you stand to gain, just based on what I can see, you know, coming forward with this information financially, personally, reputation-wise, career-wise, whatever, doesn't really offset what he stands to lose, you know, even not accounting for the jail time. If this violates some kind of contract and he loses his pension and all of his benefits, that's a lot to jeopardize for the sake of getting this information out there, you know. So in my mind, the guy seems extremely sincere, and I find him extremely credible, but you know, that's just my opinion. Micah, you guys broke this story over at The Debrief. That's a huge deal. What is it like to sit on the other side of the table there? Like, the website went down multiple times within the first 24 hours because I kept going back just to look at it and be like, I knew about this. And I was like, oh, 404, not found. What is that like right now?
Well, it's funny because Fortune magazine recently did a feature saying that thanks to News Nation, this intrepid new outlet. They said the story initially broke on an obscure aerospace blog. It would have gone entirely unnoticed. Well, as evidenced by the site going down multiple times that day, like you point out there, Aaron, we got about a million views that first day. The second day, we got another million views. I mean, and we've collected another couple after that. since the article has been sitting there for weeks now. The first 3 weeks we made it available ad free as well, just so as not to hinder the reading process.
I wanted to mention that, because I think it's I'm sorry to cut you off, but I think it really makes a statement that you guys did that. I think that's something you should be lauded for. But please continue.
Well,
I'm sorry.
I want to give credit to Leslie and Ralph. You know, that was a discussion that we all had, and of course we planned how we wanted to do that before the release, because fundamentally, I mean, I got a little pushback from some people about that decision, but I'll just say this: at the end of the day, what I've continued to say is that this story is potentially bigger than all of us, right? I don't know. I can't substantiate the claims of David Grush. I just know that my team and I, we of course vetted him and the other individuals who were mentioned in that article. And much to our surprise, all these people, I mean, they are who they say they are. They have done what they say that they do. That vetting process, although it was completed prior to publication, sort of continues in the sense that I've since been back to Washington. I've met other individuals who knew of Grush and who know other people who have made similar claims to those of Grush. And as I'm seeing this continue to unfold, I mean, for me, sitting on the other side, like you said there, Aaron, for me, it's like, well, there's this story and that's fascinating. But that was just like getting the ball rolling. Now the ball is rolling. And for me, it's been traveling. I've been to Washington now, one time since the story broke, one time right before that. I've been in communication with some individuals. I've continued to follow up on this. I'm trying to compare and contrast this with historical cases. Did a deep dive back into the whole RS-33, the Italian, fascist UFO files that involved a program allegedly spearheaded by Mussolini, but I mean, he had basically put Guglielmo Marconi in charge of this thing, and that they were looking into UFO sightings that were occurring in Italy. And some of this has been referenced by Grush also. So, I mean, the ball just got rolling with the publication of that article. And for a lot of people, it was the shot heard around the world. But for me, it was just the very beginning of all of this stuff that we're seeing unfold. And trust me, I mean, in the years ahead, we're going to continue to see shockwaves, little ripples on the pond from that. But for me, as a longtime researcher, and I'm sure that, Monique and Joss can speak to this point too, for people who've been watching this, Aaron yourself, for a long time, it's like, now, rather than being like, wow, we've learned everything, we have all the truth, all the knowledge in the universe. No. It's like, here's some fascinating new stuff. And now we've got to compare and contrast that with everything that we knew before. And we've got to ask harder questions. To Monique's point earlier about needing to be skeptical sometimes, trust me, there are moments where I'm looking at all this and thinking, we might just need to take a couple of three steps back or four and really kind of fact check and reality check. That's important to do. So many people I see out there are just, they really want it to be the moment, the watershed moment. This is disclosure. It could be, depending on what comes out of this new act, if indeed documents, and again, we could talk about that point, because I assure you, without any question, there are documents that have been withheld from the American people about UAP by agencies like the National Security Agency and others. That is absolute fact. But the fact that that information could eventually come out now, thanks to legislative action that's being taken, that's received bipartisan support, and all of that as a result of Grush coming forward, us publishing the article, News Nation doing that excellent interview, and now everybody, we the people, saying we want to know, and our lawmakers listening to us. That has been incredible. It's been a fascinating process watching all that.
Yeah. It matters who you vote for, kids. Brief aside, it matters who you vote for. Please continue. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was done. In fact, I'll throw it to the other two. But again, just reflecting on this, it's been great because since this story broke, Aaron, you and I have now gotten to chat a little bit, having been together and, we were behind the scenes. I remember telling Aaron guys that day in the airport, tomorrow you and I are going to wake up to a very different world, my friend. And that was really, really true. But Cliff Berrickman also, who we were in the car with, Cliff, of course, one of the stars of Finding Bigfoot, Aaron and Cliff and I, we were riding together to the airport.
Yeah, that was the shuttle ride of a lifetime. I'm sitting here like, how did I get here? What's happening right now? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, Cliff is very intelligent and well-informed on the UAP issue, and his wife also keeps up with all this stuff. And so Cliff reached out to me too and had me on Bigfoot and Beyond. Bobo was sick that day, unfortunately, but their intrepid producer, Matt Pruitt, good buddy of mine, joined in and chimed in a couple of times during the interview. But I said the same thing to Cliff. I was like, Cliff, dude, while all this was going down behind the scenes, I was in the back seat in the car and you and Aaron and I were going to the airport. So it's been kind of surreal watching all that. And I'm very glad I got to chat with Cliff a little bit about it. And now I'm talking with you guys, of course, here with Josh and Monique as well. And you know, one of the big takeaways I'll just tell you too, and then and I'm done for now, is that a lot of the folks who have followed this subject are looking at this stuff and going, well, I mean, we've heard this for decades. This isn't really necessarily, you know, like a big revelation in the sense that we have all heard, it's, you know, stories about wreckage retrieval, stories about legacy programs, things along these lines. For the rest of America, though, people outside our circles here, guys, you know, they're kind of looking at this going, what? They don't know what they don't know what to think. And but for my own part, if it all comes out and find, you know, the findings of this intelligence community inspector general investigation, if they say, you know what, Mr. Grush was telling the truth, the legacy programs exist, the wreckage retrievals are true, the non-human intelligence exists, as incredible as all that is, I think I'll probably, my reaction will be, well, I kind of figured.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised at this point.
It's like when you're at a party and you've been there for a couple of hours, you know, and the furniture has been rearranged a little bit and someone's had to make a beer run to refill the cooler. I don't know why I'm using this analogy, but then another friend shows up and they're like, oh, hey, I'm here. Yeah. And you're like, oh, bro, you don't even know.
Oh, no. Yeah, he comes back in after the beer run and all this, you know, the furniture has been nailed to the ceiling and he's like, after which reality he's in, that's kind of where we are right now.
There are aliens sitting in it. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, for sure. And even if this leads to the level of disclosure where they're declassifying files, our work and responsibility is still ongoing because that's happened before historically as well. Even like all the Project Blue Book files, they're just sitting there. Like the ones that they have declassified, you can go read through them, but it's sort of our job as researchers to go and then get that out there to the public and say, here's what this means. Mm-hmm. Right. So now there's more of a spotlight on it. So people are watching, mainstream wise, people are watching, unlike ever before, but we still will need to, like us within the community, will need to go and look at that and sort of organize it for people. We have so many people who are just reaching out to us just in our friend groups who we never talk about paranormal stuff, but they're like, what is happening right now? I thought of you guys first. I have to ask, yeah, like what's going on?
Same.
So it's true. You know, what Micah was saying where it's like, they don't know what's what. So we've got a little bit of responsibility there to have these conversations and kind of bring them in.
Yeah. And in the backdrop of these, you know, this misinformation campaign that we're hearing about, that's another thing that we've heard rumor and conjecture about for a long time. The documentary Mirage Men is really interesting, hits on that really, really well. And now we've got this top tier, again, government official coming forward saying, oh, yeah, no, there is a misinformation campaign. And there has been for a very, very long time. You know, it really is blowing my mind, dude. I can't keep up with it. Here's a question that I'm very excited to ask all of you, and I won't keep you too much longer after this, but Micah, in the UFO Singularity, which is one of my favorite books, and I have a signed copy of in my hand right now, you talk about the UFO Singularity, which I'm going to try to explain it, and I'm going to butcher it, and I'm sure you can correct me, but it's a moment in time where technology intersects with, you know, our expectations and artificial intelligence and the presence of UFOs. And all of a sudden, all these things become possible that we had previously only speculated about. And I'm wondering, I want to know from all of you guys, are we approaching that point? Are we reaching that place in history where all of this stuff is happening? Artificial intelligence is growing by leaps and bounds. Technology is more accessible than it's ever been. We have what could be mass government disclosure on the UFO UAP phenomena. Are we reaching the government, or not the government, are we reaching the singularity? And Micah, if I explained it the wrong way, please correct me. But
no, you did a great job. But you make a really interesting point with that question, because I hadn't really thought about this. When we launched the debrief, I did the, what would you call it? I guess just the mission statement. And you can still find that on our website. And I basically said, we're not just a UFO website. We are a website. We're looking at all these different potential disruptive technologies that could reshape the way that we see reality. And that may have everything to do with UAP, but it could also have to do with artificial intelligence. Those were the two big ones. But extend that to, for instance, you know, nuclear, viable nuclear energy. Okay. Even self-driving cars, you know, flying automobiles, things like this. Again, disruptive technologies that could fundamentally reshape, I mean, society like the automobile did, like electricity did, you know, like vaccines, like go back through history, any number of things. But the two that I focused on were AI and UFOs. And it's no big secret that, again, those two have fascinated me for a long time, as evidenced by that book. But, you know, Aaron, the fact that you're pointing out that here we've got all this debate about AI, how close it is to becoming sentient, whether that's going to be a danger to humankind, people, everybody talking about ChatGPT. Guys, you know, algorithms, basically Lambda, the predecessor to Google's Bard, essentially had been one of these language models. And there had been a Google employee who left saying it's already exhibiting signs of sentience. And he was really concerned about this. And now, of course, we've got, George Hinton, I believe, who also worked with Google. He's now since left. He's identified as the godfather of AI. And he's now warning, guys, we are on the cusp of waking up the superintelligence, and we don't know if it's going to like us and get along with us and be good to us or not. So you got all that happening in the midst of all of these UFO claims, legislation being actually passed into law to try and bring about greater transparency about what information may have been withheld from the public and illegally from Congress about acquisitions involving non-human intelligence. It is almost as though those two areas are kind of slowly merging and getting toward one another. So yeah, that's a really interesting observation you make there, Aaron. I'd love to hear what Joss and Monique say about that. But I'll just close by adding that Werner Vinge, who had been the guy who in Omni magazine first referred to all this as technological singularity, I always loved his definition because he said technological singularity will be where you wake up one day and there are things happening in your reality that don't make sense. They don't conform to the reality that you thought you knew anymore. That was one definition that he gave, and I've always liked that one. And indeed, it seems like we are approaching that point where the reality we thought we knew so well and took for granted may not be the reality that we all exist in. So we're getting very close to at least Werner's definition of that technological singularity.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so too. I love researching. So I'm like, I hit hard in facts, data, and research. But I also go by how I feel about things. So I'll kind of add the psychological aspect of that, where we're experiencing all these things, you know, online with AI, art and everything, where you don't really know what is real anymore. So I think that is kind of an aspect of it too, like a psychological aspect. Joss is, he works for Apple and he's receiving these accolades at work, and they're watching his chats and listening to his chats because he's one of the only reps who people are not asking, are you a bot? Because his like conversational style, he's like still a real person and people believe that. But it's that weirded me out to think about today. Like, we really do have to think of that. Like, am I communicating with an actual person? Or is it the technology that has surpassed the need for that at all? Right. So I don't know, just kind of psychologically, I think that's a piece to that convergence there as well. All of these things are coming, you know.
There's a game right now that you can play online that's like bot or not. And basically you chat with this AI or you are a person chatting, and the object of the game is to find out or to guess accurately, is this a real person or is this AI? And the ratio of like incorrect guesses is insane. Like, people, it's getting to the point where you really can't tell because they're learning. And especially in this game, I can't remember what it's called, and that's really bothering me, but it learns as it goes. So questions that human people are asking to try and trick other human people to say you're an AI, the AI is learning those tricks and using them also to like confuse and trick people into giving the incorrect answer.
So yeah, I think that just shows that it's sort of surpassing us a little bit, like the tech. And like, we got a Tesla late last year, and I almost had a panic attack later. And I was like, what if the power goes out? Like, I did that whole spiraling where it's like, now I have like a computer car, and then what happens? So we went and bought a 67 Chevy. So we had kind of the best of both worlds.
You're good on both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
one of those cars hasn't got a computer.
Right. That's right. So it's kind of that, like, I feel like we're at that point or approaching it because of my level of discomfort, if that makes sense. Like, I sort of don't know what to do with certain things. Like, it's out there and it's expanding and learning and growing, I guess.
Well, and there's the thing that is sort of weighing on me as like someone who takes a lot of these conspiracy theories and is just like, yep, that's what's happening.
Same, bro.
It's just because that's more fun. You know, I do have a grounded side where, yes, we need facts. We need the information. Like, but there's a lot of theories or talks in the paranormal community about how the UFOs that we're seeing may not actually be visitors from another world, but actually time travelers. And the reason that they're coming back is to keep an eye on us and make sure that we're not messing up too badly. But we're getting to this point now where AI and now possibly disclosure, where the government is going to be like, well, we have this technology now, let's use it. And all of a sudden we're on this skyrocketing path to, you know, multi-universe travel and dimensional time travel, whatever. All of a sudden now we're the Greys, and now we're going back in time to stop ourselves from doing this because we're just screwing it up and we're just stuck in this. And that makes my head spin, and I'm going to stop now because I'm going crazy. But
I'm so glad you said that. That's another concept that Mr. Hanks talks about in one of my favorite books, The UFO Singularity. This is not a paid promotion. Is the idea of UFOs being time travelers from humanity's future. Why are they showing up over war zones and you know, key moments in our ancient history? Why are they showing up over major cities? If you're a tourist with the ability to travel through time, yeah, I want to go back and watch the Battle of Gettysburg. That sounds awesome. Like, yeah. For sure. I'm really glad you said that.
Yeah. And again, like Monique said earlier, I mean, it's not necessarily that it has to be just time travelers, just extraterrestrial visitors, just, you know, again, and back when we were in the green room before Aaron got here, I'd begun to tell you guys, by the way, that Jacques Vallée, I asked him about that. You were the guy who was really not the ET person. And now you're talking about possible wreckages and retrievals and stuff. Did something change? If so, when and where? And Valet's response was just, ET's all one thing. It's all one thing. And he, his perspective on UAP and the study of it is, don't look at it as though I'm just looking at the flying saucers that Zeta Reticulans are flying. I'm just looking at the ones that are time travelers. No, he's saying, look, there are a broad range of different phenomena. None of them we can really easily explain or reconcile. They may be multiple different things. And there also may be misinformation and disinformation that has to be taken into consideration in terms of human perspective toward trying to understand all of it. But make no mistake, we could be dealing with a variety of different things. I've used this before in past interviews, but I mean, I'll say it here because it's kind of applicable. It'd be fascinating to me if extraterrestrial visitors did come to Earth one day and they do drop down on the White House lawn. And they step out and they begin to, you know, hook up their babblefishes and they're going to talk with us and everything. And we're like, well, we've been watching you guys for decades. And it's fantastic to finally see that indeed Americans weren't crazy. You've been here and now we've made contact. And they say, oh, no, this is our first time here. You must be talking about those things that appear in the sky. We've got those too. And we'd hoped that maybe you'd know what they are.
Wow.
Ooh, awesome. I like that.
That's awesome.
I love that. That actually segues us into my kind of closing point. And that is that whether we're talking about travel between stars, you know, or travel between dimensions or travel between time or any combination thereof, we're talking about infinite numbers. We're looking at infinite possibilities. Like, it's entirely plausible and in my mind likely that we're looking at multiple phenomena occurring at the same place. So I love that you said that. You must have read my mind, dude, because I did not send you guys notes. I was very last minute on this. I've kept you guys well past the hour mark, but any closing thoughts, any final remarks from anybody? I'd love to hear from everybody, but whatever you got.
I mean, I would like to do this again in like a few weeks.
Oh, yes.
And just like, can we talk about what happens?
Yes, please.
Because this is absolutely like part one and it's to be continued for sure.
Yes.
And I think that this has been a excellent discussion. And I think we're all kind of similar mindset and we're all kind of on the same page here. And I just would love to get together again and just freak out.
Likewise.
I actually had the same thought earlier and I was going to message you guys about it off air, but you know, you read my mind again. So it's happening. It's totally happening.
Yeah. I'm just excited to see what's talked about next week at the hearing. But at that same time, I do think that they're going to be dealing with that smaller scope, right? Like the physical craft we have seen or recovered, which can still exist with things like, you know, theoretical science, like what's going on right now. You mentioned Colm Kelleher earlier in Skinwalker. I know there's a new team there now, but they are finding evidence of wormholes. Like the science they're doing there right now and documenting is insane. So I'm just going to continue to keep my mind open for all of that as well. And remember that it doesn't have to be these, you know, these mutually exclusive ideas. It's a little bit of everything.
It just is. It's so connected. Hard for the government to just be like, it's all real.
Yeah.
And then just like, click the camera off. They got to kind of give us like little bits at a time. I feel like.
Sure. That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, if there've been laws that have prevented people from just being able to come out and plainly say, hey, yeah, this is all real. There are a lot of people who have come forward and said, yeah, we've heard things about wreckages. Yeah. We've heard things about retrievals. Now we've got individuals saying the non-human intelligence situation that everybody's talking about, it is true, it is real, this is really happening. And again, like Monique said, it's going to be a matter of trying to go back through and kind of, you know, look at all these claims that have been presented over the years. Also very much like Joss said, going forward, we're going to have to continue to kind of look at this because this is obviously just chapter one. There's a lot yet to come. And indeed, I'm expecting some fireworks here in the days ahead.
Keep your eyes on the sky. Ah, proverbially, literally. There you go. Thank you for tuning into Strange Conversations. And thank you. Oh, my God. Thank you so much to Joss, Monique, and Micah for... We're in three different time zones right now, and we rescheduled this thing like four times. So thank you guys so much. I can't tell you how grateful I am. There will be links in the description to everything that Joss and Monique and Mike are doing. Check out all of those links and hopefully we'll see you in a couple weeks, a month or two for the next part of this conversation. Cause there's more to come for sure. Another huge, huge thank you to Joss, Mo and Micah for hanging out with me and generously donating their time. Be sure to check out the links in the description and keep an eye on all of the amazing work that these three exemplary humans are sharing with the world. Join us next time for our first on-the-ground investigation, wherein we took a spooky overnight stay in the historically haunted Menger Hotel. And if you enjoyed this show and want even more strangeness in your life, head on over to patreon.com/heystrangeness where you can join the Strange Folk for as little as $1 per month. Part one of our first bonus episode, The Red Mind Stirs, is now available. This week, we also shared photos of wood structures and odd footprints captured in the green belts of San Antonio and an overview of the Latin American legend of La Lechuza. We also shared an article detailing Sasquatch activity in San Antonio, and if you're as excited about our next episode as I am, you can even check out the raw audio that we recorded at the Menger Hotel. This show is supported by our amazing Strange Folk members, and we are so, so grateful to every one of you. People like Drew and Lexi of Final Girl Graphics, Dasos Crowsong, Scott, Laura, Alex, Jeremiah of the Bigfoot Society, and Rick. From the bottom of our hearts, we thank you. You've been listening to Hey Strangeness. Stay strange.